Well, good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRT-LP, 95.7 FM in Davis, California. We live online at kdrt.org. I'm Bill Buchanan. Thank you for tuning in today. Well, today's subjects are fire and water. Fire, because California's wildfire season is now longer and more damaging than it used to be, and water, because we're in a bad drought. And what if it continues? How do these conditions affect Davis? We'll learn more about that in today's program, which has two parts, and you'll hear both parts today. We'll talk with Joe Tenney, Davis Fire Chief, and Stan Grichko, Director of Public Works, Utilities, and Operations for the city. We'll begin with water, so Stan is up first. Stan, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yep, happy to be here.
So first, could you please tell us a little bit about what you do for the city of Davis?
Sure. So I'm the, as you mentioned, Director of Utilities and Operations for the city that primarily deals with water, wastewater, facilities, operations of streets and maintenance, and a few other things thrown in there. But primarily any of the operational activity within the city falls within the department that I manage and the team that I work with.
So your job basically is to make sure that the water we have gets delivered to everybody in good shape.
That is correct. That's one facet, absolutely.
So generally speaking, what is the water situation in Davis as we get ready to start fall 2021?
So we're, Davis is has a decent water supply. We have a conjunctive system, which means we have both surface water and groundwater sources. And that's by design, primarily for the conditions that we're experiencing and have experienced over the past number of years. So we have some stable supplies. But that being said, we still want to encourage conservation, obviously, because there aren't any water sources that are infinite, right?
Yeah.
But going into the fall, we're in pretty good shape.
How much water do we use as a community? I realize it varies by time of year.
Yeah, it can vary. You know, we're as little as 5 million gallons a day in the winter as a community, up to the highest I've seen this summer is around 12 and a half to 13 million gallons a day. Obviously, primarily irrigation is the change in those two numbers. And that's obviously the area that is the largest of concern for us when we talk about conservation.
Yeah. And so then how does that demand compare to supply? I mean, we have enough water, it sounds like, but I realize there's only so much to go around.
At full supply, if we were to have full surface water capacity coming down, which is 10.2 million gallons a day, and all of our deep well sources, which are roughly 13 million gallons a day, we'd have, you know, over 20 million gallons of supply available per day. That being said, we don't always have full allocation from surface water. Obviously, the conditions we're in, you know, we're only seeing about 5 million gallons a day, not 10, from the surface water facility at this point. So that's about half of what we normally would. And just because we have those deep wells with high quality groundwater doesn't mean we want to tax them out as to the max as, you know, all the time. We certainly want to preserve what we can there in the groundwater source as well. So,
yeah, historically, Davis drew primarily on groundwater. And then that changed a few years ago, right, where we got the project in to get water from the Sacramento River. And as I understand it, the mix varies. People have lived in Davis a long time. One of the old jokes about Davis was, you know, the water was hard to drink. Personally, I didn't find it that way. I've lived here quite a while, but I know it depended where you lived and, of course, your individual sensitivity, I suppose. But right now, I got from the city website that the mix for July, we're getting about 60% from the ground and about 40% from the river. And that's due to the drought, right? That mix?
That's correct. Normally, it'd be a little more surface water than groundwater, even in the summer. And then almost all surface water in the winter, obviously, when we only have about, you know, 5 million gallon of a day demand. But yes, because our allocations from the water plant and the surface water are cut, you are seeing a higher percentage of groundwater being used.
So I guess here's the big question, you know, as we enter fall and as we look ahead, what happens if the drought keeps going? I was trying to look for a good forecast for this winter and I didn't see anything that looked terribly glum, but nothing terribly hopeful either.
I would agree. Yeah, I'm obviously water, you know, across the state and across the western states is at a premium. And you're absolutely correct. The surface water, the reservoirs certainly are not in good condition right now. They're at historic lows, frankly, at this point. So if we do not see significant rainfall, you know, there's only so much surface water to go around. And it could be that we would be relying almost exclusively on our groundwater at some point if these conditions continue.
Yeah, and that's like drawing down your savings, isn't it, in a financial sense? You don't want to do too much of that.
Correct. We built this system to be conjunctive. We would not want to rely on 100% either at all times.
So Davis has various water restrictions in place right now, and people can find these at savedaviswater.org. Governor Newsom has asked Californians to cut their use by 15%. This was a while ago. How much water is Davis trying to save? Is that a moving target? But you know, how much, if someone's listening to this and think, well, I want to do my part, what percentage reduction are you looking for people? What would be a nice spot to get to?
We have also followed Governor Newsom's lead and requested via press releases and others a 15% voluntary reduction. So that 15 to 20% would be fantastic, quite honestly, from users. But recognize also that when we went through this in 2015, the community really stepped up and we saw significant reductions in 15. And we didn't see a bounce back once we had a few years of rain. So asking the community to reduce significantly again is going to be a challenge for many because they never started using the water again like previous.
Well, yeah, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask is that, I mean, it's one thing to cut 15% if you're a glutton and sure. Something else to cut 15% if you're very austere. The restrictions that that are on the Davis website, which, you know, have these different ways you can save, drip irrigation, for example, sure. The equipment that you have, shorter showers. If someone's doing that, you know, is that good? Is that enough?
Well, it's like I said, the community at large in general has adopted most of those practices as normal behavior. Absolutely. There's always room for improvement. I mean, you know, efficient appliances, changing out to drip irrigation, reducing overall irrigation. So instead of 3 times a week, 2 times a week, you know, those things can be done, but it does become more of a challenge once more of the community enacts those practices as an ongoing behavior, not just we're in a drought, we need to conserve for 2 months and then we're fine, right?
Yeah. And over the long range, California has been trying to encourage people generally to use less water, right? I mean, California is an arid state even before our more recent conditions, the droughts and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. And upcoming regulations are only going to enhance that drive to lower per capita water use. So we're going to continue to see that.
I saw that actually on one of your department's websites, I imagine, that talked about the savings that Davis has had and said that Davis was a little bit of an uptick and that could be, if I read it correctly, a bit of a problem relative to what's coming up. What's ahead in terms of further cutbacks, drought aside maybe, but what's the state cut plan?
There's still a lot of rulemaking going on at the state level, as you can imagine, because we're in the middle of this, right? Which is not always the best time to enact regulation when you're looking at long-term effect, not short-term. But in essence, one of the main things they're looking at are water budgets as an agency. So we would essentially have a per capita target of gallons per day that we as an agency would need to meet. And if we don't meet that, then, you know, they start looking to, you know, have those discussions with us on what are we doing internally to get those numbers down. And some of the numbers they're discussing are pretty aggressive when it comes to, you know, reductions in water. But like I said, we as a community, we're probably closer to meeting those targets than many communities. So I think it's Davis as a whole, the community really takes to that message pretty good and already did back in 15 and 16. So I think we're in a lot better place than maybe some other communities that are going to have to really start being a lot more restrictive.
I should mention for people who may be fairly new to Davis that this drought we've had the last couple of years, it wasn't like it had been a long time before the prior drought. And that's what you're referring to, right? In 2015, 2016, which were also dry years.
Correct.
How's climate change factoring into your planning and decisions about water supplies?
So as we look at longer term planning for water supply and resiliency, climate change is a huge impact across all the utilities. Frankly, we're talking about water today, but really in all the utilities, it's an impact and a condition we need to plan for. We are looking at a few studies. We're doing a study right now called aquifer storage and recovery, which means we would take surface water in wet years, put it in the ground and basically store it in an aquifer in the ground. And then in the summer, when we have higher demand or we have, you know, years like we're experiencing, we'd be able to withdraw that and use it as a water supply for the community instead of relying just on our deep aquifers. So that's one study we're doing. I will tell you, WDQA, which is the Joint Powers Authority that manages the surface water plant, which Davis is a member of, we are also looking at building resilient water supplies from a surface water perspective. So we're looking out, it's not looking out in the next 5 to 10, we're looking out 25 to 30 years from now and trying to position both the city and the Joint Powers Authority in positions that will enable us to have a resilient supply.
Okay. We had a very slight rain. I don't want to call it a storm. A few days ago, we're talking on Monday, the 13th. And of course, typically when we're in a drought and there's any kind of rain, one of the first things I'll hear is it won't make any difference, but it must make some difference. And it got me wondering, I wanted to ask you, when we get, it was just a little bit of rain, do you see at least like a drop in water consumption on a day like that? I mean, I guess I'm wondering, does it make some difference?
Well, given, you know, given the current requirement, so let me step back a minute. The one from Monday did not make a difference in the local area here. Yeah, absolutely not. There was not enough there. But when you see from a storm perspective, when you do see a storm that drops, say, a quarter inch, you know, or an eighth of an inch, you know, we do absolutely encourage and in fact require, you know, you should not be watering within 48 hours of that event, either before or after. And that will absolutely lead to a reduction in water. Now, the volume obviously is going to, you know, change depending on time of the year, but absolutely those storms can have an impact on your, that 1 or 2 day use of water. But as far as, you know, with the reservoirs and seeing any impact in the river, you need a lot more rainfall than what occurred.
Yeah. I guess it's almost a psychological question I pose to you. You know, when you get a drought, one of the things you really want is for it to end. And so when you get a little bit of a rain or even a good storm, and then the first thing you hear is, oh, it doesn't make any difference. It's like, it just kind of brings you down.
It's not a good message, right? But it is, you know, it's a condition where, you know, we want to encourage that conservation and the reduction. So from that perspective, it's a positive thing. But when you're talking drought conditions, it's just that honest acknowledgement that it's going to take a number of significant storms to kind of break that cycle.
All right. Well, we're just about done with this segment. I did want to ask, what's one really good thing that people can do to save water, maybe if they haven't really thought about it much yet?
I think one of the, you know, when we talk about summer and drought conditions, because, you know, we're not talking about health and safety indoors. I mean, people need water. We need that to live and survive and, you know, be healthy. The largest thing people can do, certainly in the summertime and into the winter, is reduce the irrigation. You know, we want to have healthy trees. We certainly don't want to impact our tree canopy to a large degree. But, you know, when we're talking turf areas and other things, reducing irrigation or changing out those systems so that we're not running water down the drain really can have a massive impact on the amount of water we have to use and consume every day.
Yeah. And I think you made the point earlier in the program, but it's true. Most of the water that we're using in Davis is outside, right?
In the summer, as you mentioned, if we go from 5 to about 12 and a half, all of that extra water in the summer is primarily for irrigation outside.
All right.
Yep.
Well, we have been talking with Stan Grichko, who is the Director of Public Works, Utilities, and Operations for the city. In a minute, we'll hear from Joe Tenney, the Fire Chief of Davis. Stan, thank you for joining us today.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Listening to Davisville on KDRT-LP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. I'm Bill Buchanan, and now I'd like to introduce Joe Tenney. He is the fire chief for the city of Davis, and we are going to talk about the changing fire conditions in the state and how they affect Davis. Chief, thank you for joining us today, and I want to welcome you back. I understand that you have been out yourself helping to fight the wildfires in California. Where were you working?
Hi, Bill. Thank you very much for inviting me on the show to, you know, have an opportunity to talk about some of these things. Thank you for the, you know, the welcoming back. I was assigned to the Caldor incident, which is the one that started outside of Placer Hill and Pollock Pines, and then made its big runs up into the South Lake Tahoe and the Tahoe Basin area. And so we've we just came back with our strike team from that incident just a couple of days ago.
And I imagine there were other firefighters from Davis who are out on those lines too.
Yeah, so part of that strike team is basically five engine companies of a specific type with a leader, and I was the leader. And so we did have an engine from Davis, and then also Woodland, UC Davis, Yochidehi, and Willow Oak Fire Department.
You know, I looked up just the latest statistics today, and they're changing, of course. We're not done with the fire season yet, but so far, California's had more than 7,400 wildfires this year that they have burned more than 3,500 square miles. You know, I think that's sort of behind this quote that I want to start with now. This is a quote from Tom Porter. He's the chief of the State Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. And on August 31st, he said, "There is fire activity happening in California that we have never seen before. For the rest of you in California, every acre can and will burn someday in this state." It's an arresting comment, will burn. Davis has been pretty fortunate in this regard, but how much does that apply to Davis, what he's saying?
Well, a couple of things on that. You know, that's an interesting quote and very accurate in the fact that we're seeing fire behavior and conditions that, frankly, in the 34 years of my service, working in the fire service, things we've never seen before, mentioning like Santa Rosa Fire, the Camp Fire in Paradise. And so we are definitely in a new era that we've been trying to deal with for the last 7 or more years. With these seasons getting harder and worse and worse. As far as the every acre burn, that's an interesting one. It's a good line for attention. I often get family members that ask me from other states that say, is there anything left to burn in California? You know, which always makes me kind of laugh because there is a lot of area that it's much bigger than the acres is already burned. But you also have the burn scars in California where they did have bad fires, you know, 5 or 10 years ago that have regrowth. And so, you know, sometimes that helps with when a new fire burns into the old fire, you know, burn scar, but they still burn. So yeah, there's always that potential. As far as the second part of your question to the city of Davis, we're in a more unique area of where we're not up in the hills, we're not up in the forest. We don't necessarily have that kind of exposure. And I think that sometimes people get, I wouldn't say complacent about it, but I guess not understanding the potential. And the reality is, I often use the fact that there was a fire several years ago that started on the freeway, I-5 down in Stockton. And it was in the middle of the summer, but the wind was driving. And that fire started in grass, very simple fire. But as the wind drove it off of the freeway and up a small hill into some brush that then got in next door to apartment complex and started apartment complex and burned it down. We had a similar fire in Davis many years ago in West Davis. Similar situation on the walkway there on Arlington that started in some pine needles, then got into the brush, into a fence, and then started a home on fire. You know, every fire starts small, basically. And when the conditions are right, especially when you have wind on it, or especially a north dry wind, that fire can be driven into any sort of kind of situation. Anytime you have dry leaves, pine needles, grass, brush, it'll probably not turn into a forest fire because we're just not in the forest, but it doesn't mean that there's a hazard there. And we have been paying more and more attention to doing fire mitigation around the city of Davis in some of the drainages and the ponds and things where there is dry brush close to homes. And we've been working hard on that and trying to do what we can to help make a safer environment if there was to be a fire.
Is your point that Davis has conditions that can lead to fire like you described? Something starts in the brush and it burns on a windy day. Of course, that would have been true for a long time. And I suppose maybe what's changed now is that the fire season is longer. The winds maybe are stronger. The heat is more intense. And so the increased risk to Davis comes from that territory. In other words, the conditions are here, but now they're exacerbated. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that that's accurate. And, you know, every summer, California has a fire season where we're going to have our 100-degree days. We're going to have those weather pressure gradients that cause north winds and even south winds. You know, wind for fire situation is always bad. It's one of the biggest denominators that cause rapid fire growth and spread. And, yeah, even in Davis, I'm not saying it's any drier or hotter, but the drought does present drier conditions. Up on the cauldrons that we just came from, they talk about the Tahoe National Forest, the El Dorado National Forest. They measure all kinds of things. One of the things they do is the live fuel moistures. Those are the live trees. They, every day, we're reporting that at 7% water content. that's incredibly dry. And so it does make it very receptive to fire spread. Even it doesn't have to be the down dead trees. All the live fields too are very receptive because it's just so dry.
Do you measure things like that in Davis? That's an interesting way of looking at the risk.
No, we don't. It doesn't really apply well here. There's not really a reason for us to do that. And we certainly don't have the resources to do that.
So that's something you do more in a forest then, it sounds like.
Well, they do that because it all comes together with trying to predict how the fire is going to behave that day for all the fire crews. Every day they look at the weather and the fuel moistures and the topography, all the things that play a part into the fire behavior for the safety of the personnel and also where they think that fire is going to go and how they're going to work at containing it. So it goes, a lot goes into these fighting these fires.
So now Davis is a very flat town. Is that relatively a fortunate thing in that regard? I mean, the wind blows just as strong, but you don't have, well, we do have some pretty well-treated neighborhoods, but you know, we don't have slopes.
Yeah, topography is really not an issue for Davis when it comes to the fires and the spread and so forth. We're on the west side of the valley. And as you go towards winters and so forth, you know, as you saw last year, we do get those north winds heavier in this area in Yolo County than say you might get in Sacramento or El Dorado County. We're very susceptible to the north dry winds.
I did look at a fire hazard severity zone map. This is from 2007 in the state. So maybe there's a more recent one, but it showed the very high risk areas in the mountains at the west edge of Yolo County, which is what you're talking about, west of Winters.
I think everybody's familiar with what occurred last year. We call that the LNU area because the Lake Napa unit for CAL FIRE, they're responsible for that. And we have a contract to help them out when they need it. And last year, if you remember the LNU complex, one of the largest fires that we had last year, came down the hill in the middle of the night and started burning homes in Winters and Yolo and Solano counties and moved its way down into Vacaville and so forth. And so, yeah, that threat is there. And that's not, you know, we have had fires up in those areas for the last 5 years. It's just been an area that's been very prone to a lot of fires.
If someone's new to the area, the LNU, that was around Lake Berryessa, roughly. It was quite a big fire last year. You can read quite a lot about it online if someone wants to look up more. You mentioned a minute ago mitigation measures in Davis. What sort of things is the fire department doing? And then after that, I'd like to know what the rest of us should be doing. But what are you folks doing to address, reduce the fire risks that we have?
So the challenges, again, with Davis not being in the forest, I think some people are familiar with the forest and CAL FIRE trying to promote the 100-foot clearance. And so in the forest, it really, again, doesn't apply to Davis, but there are definitely things that people can do to be more aware about if a fire was to occur. The areas that we've been focusing on becoming more proactive about trying to clean up are basically like the Poudre Creek drainage areas, the pond areas, anywhere where we have accumulation of dry grass and brush and trees and things, especially the closer they are to homes. We're working with Public Works to get in there and to clean up those areas and at least provide a break. And what that means is we're trying to clear 50 feet from the hazardous areas in and limbing up trees 6 foot high. And what that does is even though the fire may creep in there, it buys us time to get there with the fire engine and get in position to be able to put that fire out without, you know, if you get into dry brush and a lot of downed wood and pine needles, a lot of stuff that's built up, the fire is going to build up very quickly and may move along faster, especially with the wind on it, then we have time to get there so that we can put it out before it gets too far.
And what should individuals be doing?
If your property backs up to one of these areas that has a lot of green belt or dry brush and built up fire material, you definitely don't want to have a lot of pine needles on your roof or in your gutters or anything that could carry the fire into your home area. So if you have a lot of brush, things that haven't been trimmed or kept neatly all the way up to your fence, fences catch fire all the time, and now you've got a bigger fire. And then once that gets into the home, those home fires put off so much energy. Now it's beyond our ability to control very well in a wind. You know, if you have several homes that are all shaped roof in alignment with the north wind, once the first home gets going pretty good in a wind, it's going to take a lot of effort to keep it from going from house to house to house because there's so much energy that comes off of that. It's challenging for us. But yeah, just kind of general cleanup and look for those areas of collected needles and extra brush and stuff and clean those out. It gives us better opportunity to defend your home.
How's climate change affecting your planning?
You know, I'm not an expert on the climate change, but what I can say is there's been a clear change over the last 7 years in the fire service, in this particular in California. Definitely drier. Again, I talked about fuel moistures. The things that are indicative of that is that we used to look at disastrous fires that when you had 100 homes burned down, that got a lot of attention and got a lot of resources on that incident because that was a disaster. And now we're talking about thousands, and in a few cases, tens of thousands of structures that are burning down, whole communities that are burning down, things we just have not seen before. Fire making a run through the city of Santa Rosa that you really would never even imagine could happen. But like I said, once in a high wind situation, once you start getting homes burning or businesses, there's so much energy coming out of that. And then with the wind, you have these firestorms can produce large embers that are on fire that are carried half a mile. And on the Calder incident we just came from, they were talking about new spot fires being ignited by these embers half a mile to a mile ahead of the fire itself. So that obviously presents huge challenges for the fire. You don't know where that's going to start. They're called spot fires. When it's creating new fires out in front, it's really hard to control. They also use what's called a burning index. When the conditions are right, they measure it from 0 to 100. And that burning index is indicating how receptive the fuels are. And when it's at 90%, what that's saying is that 9 out of 10 embers, just the embers, 9 out of 10 embers that cross over the line are going to start a new fire on the other side. And that just is so challenging to try to stay in control of. And that's how these fires are making these big runs.
I can hear, sounds like some fire radio chatter there in the background. I assume nothing's going wrong right at the moment.
I'm at the headquarters station in Davis, and they're going on calls regularly down here. They stay pretty busy.
Yeah.
And here, we got a siren going by, so it's probably a medical call.
I wonder, is there something about firefighting that people don't know, but you think they should know, particularly in Davis?
Well, that's a really good question. Actually, Davis is pretty, the residents in the community are really on top of it. You know, when there's smoke and they're concerned for either fires that are being used for warming or cooking or something, the community of Davis is pretty on top of reporting issues or having concerns about that. And I think that also includes, you know, some of this fire mitigation stuff, you know, which is great to see. Sorry about the background noise. More calls are coming in. It's been very much appreciated that the community is involved that way and very aware. And they talk to us all the time. And we're very involved with the community and have had a really good response from them. People have questions. We're always available for phone calls and happy to meet with and talk about issues that they may be concerned with.
So how would someone get a hold of the fire department? Not for an emergency, but if they just had questions, you know, they wanted to ask, opinions about property nearby that they, you know, how clear does it need to be?
Yeah, they're more than welcome to. There's a place on the City of Davis website for the fire department specifically, and you can leave a message there and it'll come right to us and we can answer questions that way. Or they can certainly stop by. We're not as open and available to the public because of the COVID stuff going on, pandemic. But, you know, we can find ways to socially distance and use face coverings to still visit with people out on the front ramp. And we do all the time. Or they can call the main number, 530-757-5684. And we're certainly, if they don't get a hold of us, we'll certainly return a call and provide any sort of service they're looking for.
All righty. Well, thank you, Chief. I feel like you've got to attend to that radio, although it doesn't look like it's too drastic at the moment. But thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
We've been talking today about this year's fire season and drought and how they affect Davis with Joe Tenney, Davis Fire Chief, and Stan Gritschko, Director of Public Works, Utilities, and Operations for the city. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. Thank you for listening.